All right, welcome to Talking Taker, episode number 17, our encyclopedic exploration, digging up the career of professional wrestling's greatest character of all time. We want to thank you for joining us yet again for another round of Dead Man Talking. I am here, I am Alex Dorio, I am one of your hosts for this journey into the dark side, one of the creatures of the night, and I want to introduce you to my tag team partner, and as always, my co-host, Travis White, and I see you using those Stridex Medicaid pads over there.
Oh, you beat me to it, man. I was going to mention that. Yes. Where have those gone?
I don't think they exist anymore.
They're super Stridex pads.
Excuse me.
Yeah. They're huge. Yeah. Those of you who don't know what we're talking about, this is sponsored for this particular pay-per-view. And a lot of pay-per-views, I think.
Yeah.
They're basically like clear seal, but the little pad. You just use one to face to get rid of your acne.
Man, did you use those?
No, I use clear still, though.
Oh, okay. But you use the pads?
No, I use the face wash.
Oh, okay. I had the pads. Man, they burned so bad. They're just like pure alcohol. Just like, it didn't work at all. I had acne for a long time. So.
Bob Ram, you. Stridex pads. That's all I got to say. Anyway, anybody who gets my babe ticket. Babe reference will give me a thumbs up on that.
There you go.
Oh, I don't know what's happening right now. But I thank you guys for coming back and joining us as we walk through the man who walked with angels, The Undertaker, in his matches.
We are walking with him again. Do you think Elias like got inspired by that? Who wants to walk with Elias?
I think so.
Who wants to walk with the angels?
Watching, he's watching the last King of the Ring 95, and he got inspired.
He just happens to be on TV on Raw right now, so that just made me think
of that. Well, maybe, it is 95, so Black Crowes, she talks to angels, been out for a few years at this point. So maybe Todd Pettengill was just big on Black Crowes.
Big Black Crowes fan.
I gotta get this in there. No. Anyway.
Well, speaking of fans, you mentioned right before we got on that your son, Carson, he's kind of becoming a fan of The Undertaker and Paul Bearer as well. He mentioned something as you were watching this match.
Yeah, I was watching this match, and he was watching it with me, helping me review it. And he's actually playing, but he heard Paul Bearer giving a promo, and he heard the and he walks over and he's like, "Dad, who is that guy?" I told him it was Paul Bearer, and he's like, "Who's that behind him?" I said, "Well, that's the Undertaker." He said, "Oh, that little figure that you have," because those listeners, Alex sent me a little Undertaker figure in the mail a few weeks ago, so my son knows that, and so he's like, "Oh yeah, man. Undertaker's a good guy. I hope he wins. I hope he beats up this guy." But anyway, he comes back in a few minutes and he's like, "Dad, that man's voice is absolutely hilarious." He's talking about Paul Bearer. So even to a 5-year-old, he knows it. He gets the joke, Paul Bearer's voice. So I think it's great. So.
Oh, yeah. And it just proves the point that, this character, Paul Bearer and The Undertaker, both the connection, they connect with the younger audience. They connect with the kids. And dude, we'll get into it in this match, but they are connected with the audience here at SummerSlam. It was a hot crowd for The Undertaker, dude. It was awesome.
Absolutely was. Yeah, and we're back in Pennsylvania, which I mentioned at the end of last week's episode. I just think I don't know if they do that. They come back 2 months now, and, same state, another pay-per-view. I thought it was kind of strange, but maybe it's because they didn't have as many back then. I don't know.
Right, and they were in Philly for King of the Ring, and now they're in Pittsburgh, so. I mean, I guess that's two separate audiences, but yeah, still, it is kind of weird to be in the same state. SummerSlam 1995. We skipped over another In Your House pay-per-view in between now and then, I believe.
He may or may not have been on that card as far as a dark match. I was looking through a couple different sources, and a couple of them said he was on a dark match, and a couple said he wasn't. So, I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant, but we're covering pay-per-views, but... from the sources I did read, it said he was. He had another dark match with Kama on that show.
Well, with Kama?
So I don't
know. Okay.
But anyway, we're at SummerSlam 95. It's August 27th, 1995. So, again, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. But this match has been building since WrestleMania, man. So
yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I appreciate that. This is not my least favorite match we've reviewed. So
no.
It's not my least favorite. So it had I was a little more engaged as far as the actual match. It's a long match. But, you know, I appreciate the storyline that they've gone, you know, even as cheesy as it is, just melting the urn down and making a necklace. I appreciate the continuity. You know, we're both sticklers for storytelling, and they've built this since WrestleMania. So I appreciate that.
I agree. It's simple. It's silly. But, yeah, as you said, it's been building since WrestleMania, and you can even extend it further with Undertaker's connection with the a feud with Million Dollar Man. It's kind of been going on for a year since SummerSlam 94.
Since Undertaker a year ago.
But specifically with Kama, and I was thinking, like, if you were to try to do this now, you know, they skipped over three pay-per-views before they even got to this match. So without them having any contact with each other besides house shows and dark matches, but on TV, they didn't really get physical with each other from WrestleMania to SummerSlam. But if you try to do something like that nowadays to build a feud that long, they would have fought at every single one of those pay-per-views. Probably would have had the gimmick match, the casket match on the first pay-per-view for some reason, and then had like a basic match after that. And they would have fought on Raw half a dozen times. So it's nice to be able to do a longer feud and not have them wrestle 15 times on TV.
Oh, yeah. And that used to be how it was. I mean, now there's oversaturation and so much content. But, you know, it's great. Speaking of Raw, I went back and watched the Raw before this. And Raw, actually, it's on August 21st, 95. And it actually starts with a recap. But we'll get into the recap later. It's the whole episode of Raw starts off with a recap of this angle, basically. Okay. Yeah, which is pretty cool because Undertaker later on in that night he has a match with Tatanka. And he cuts a promo on Tatanka and he's angry. He talks about he's on his death march on the way to SummerSlam.
Unfortunately for you, Tatanka, tonight starts my death march to SummerSlam. And on this march, I will do away with as many corporate members as possible. DiBiase, you inform Kama of what awaits him at SummerSlam. And Tatanka, you prepare to rest in peace.
And during the match, he's like, he's mad. He's angry. You can tell, which is kind of cool. Again, because as we'll talk about in the recap of this before this match, there's a reason he's so angry because Kama Mustafa, is that his whole name?
He's just Kama, the Supreme Fighting Machine, right?
That's
now.
Right. But he has crossed the line at this point. We'll get into that. But he's crossed the line, so Undertaker's angry. But This Monday Night Raw on August 21st is the very last Monday Night Raw unopposed before Nitro starts. So
I did not know that.
On the 28th, the next week, it's preempted for tennis. Mm-hmm. And then the very next week is Labor Day. It's preempted for tennis again. But that is when Monday Nitro begins. So this is our final pay-per-view before the Monday Night War era. So I thought that was pretty significant, pretty cool. I wanted to point that out to us and to the listeners too.
It is. That's huge. And obviously that's going to change the whole business, going to change the whole direction of the WWE. And we won't see that initially, but we're going to see it start to creep in here in 96. And then definitely in 97, we're going to see some elements of that creep in. So I'm glad you brought that up. That's interesting.
Yeah. I thought it was an interesting point I wanted to make. Because again, it's not going to affect us right now in the next few pay-per-views necessarily, but the next couple of years it really will. But WWE starts putting their best foot forward after that. As far as the shows on Raw can't be throwaways anymore, you know, you got to put on good stuff. Because I think the week after, if I'm correct, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the week after Nitro's debut, the main event is like Sid and Shawn, I believe. So that's a big match on Raw. So anyway, that's just enough about that. But I just thought an interesting note to throw in there. So Undertaker's on the main event of the very first Monday Night Raw, and he's on featured heavily on the one before Nitro. So pretty cool.
And he is kind of moving back into more of a top tier spot here at SummerSlam. Yeah. He's, if you watch the beginning of the show, he's one of the top four matches featured in the video package building up to it, one of the featured matches on here. And even if you look at the main event, Diesel and Mabel, we talked a little bit about that on the last episode. Ooh. But the guy that Undertaker put over, Mabel, he got the rub from him, and now he's in the main event. So Undertaker being more established, having to have a bigger spot here than he has been on the past few pay-per-views. So that's kind of cool to see. And the match itself is preceded by just a great video package recapping this whole feud with your man Todd Pittengale doing some ridiculous voiceover.
Yeah, I love this recap, man. I wrote it down too. Like it was a fun recap. Yeah, it's ridiculous puns all throughout it and all kind of stuff. But it does go to show the whole story. It starts at WrestleMania and it goes on to show what we talked about on last week's episode about the creatures of the night being these guys, you know, these gothic characters in the audience, a guy and a girl usually. Seemed like they're usually the same people. I don't know. Maybe
I think it was.
Some of them sounds different, but
yeah.
But anyway,
I like at the beginning, Todd says that
during The Undertaker's illustrious World Wrestling Federation career, there have been many opponents who have been bold enough to trespass on the dark side. However, thus far, none have returned the same.
He's definitely gotten the upper hand in pretty much every feud that he's had, so that was a good point to make.
Yeah, it's very true. I thought that too, so yeah, it's a really cool recap, but it goes on and it shows, again, what I mentioned earlier about Kama crossing the line, is that on the Superstars, the week before this pay-per-view, he's in the ring, and again, there's a wreath, I believe, right? A black wreath is in the ring, and he comes in there and rips it all up and everything after his match, and then he walks away up the rampway, and one of the creatures of the night, the male creature of the night, hops the guardrail and runs into the ring and starts gathering the pieces together, and Kama takes it upon himself to get back in the ring, and the creature of the night throws the black wreath shreds into Kama's face, which I wouldn't throw something into a Supreme Fighting Machine's face. But
probably not the smartest idea.
Yeah,
no.
Creature, I don't know if he's a zombie, if he has a brain or not, or what, but anyway, he definitely takes it upon himself. But anyway, at that point, Kama does a double like choke lift and slams him down. I guess what Albert goes on to use later on as his finisher. I don't know what you call that move, but
I guess it's like a tree slam, like Great Khali kind of used to do it too.
Yeah.
Some of that. Yeah, I think Albert is similar to like the Baldo bomb, but he didn't drop down with it.
Right.
So yeah, crossing the line there.
That's where he crosses the line, man. Yeah.
I mean, he attacked a fan, who also the fan ran into the ring, so I guess justified.
Fair game.
But yeah, they've kind of established in this package something we talked about a little bit, that these creatures of the night, it says on there specifically that Kama has desecrated the sacred urn, and instead Undertaker has been looking to the creatures of the night for his power. So looking to these fans and all of the fans for his power, and now Kama has attacked one of them, as Todd Pittengill said, with the look of death in his black pupils. Which
now, yeah, okay. I'm
okay.
Not gonna touch that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll just let that breathe.
Let that one go.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Yeah. Yeah, well, anything else he said? I can't recover from that.
He said,
to the Undertaker, this was an act that blackened his darkest cloud. Deep within his dark soul, Kama's funeral procession had already begun.
Ooh.
Which,
wow.
Okay, I mean, if that's
it's
true.
It's like an Alice in Chains song. It's not bad because like Alice in Chains lyrics.
He likes Alice in Chains and Black Crowes.
Yeah, he does.
But if Undertaker was so upset about this, why didn't he run out and like protect his guy?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Maybe he wasn't on Superstars. Who knows?
I guess not.
Wasn't there that. But again, it does help that they didn't get physical, you know, because you wait for anticipation.
You're right.
And again, the fact that Taker's so angry leads us into the very beginning of the actual match, which is pretty cool. We see something a little different than we have seen in the past.
Yes.
Matches. So I do want to mention before we get to the match, though, after that recap, were there any more notes in the recap?
Well, I do want to say that apparently the match had already been made at this point after Kama attacked him, but the new interim president of the WWF, Gorilla Monsoon, decides that because of this attack, he's going to make it a casket match officially.
Yeah.
So we're getting our fourth casket match, I believe. Well, we had a coffin match, so this is our third casket match, which there's a bit of confusion on Jerry Lawler's part during the match.
And Vince's part. Yeah. I want to talk about that later on, too. So.
Yeah, so he makes this a casket match, and that leads me to a new segment I want to debut on the show called As a Kid Corner, because I always talk about as a kid. I always bring that up, preface things. So as a kid, the introduction of Gorilla Monsoon as the interim WWF president really upset me a little bit. I wasn't a really big fan of his at the beginning. This is where he came on at SummerSlam 95 to replace Jack Tunney. And he upset me because it was the original card for SummerSlam was Shawn Michaels versus Sid for the Intercontinental Championship. And that was a feud that had been building since WrestleMania. Shawn Michaels was going to get his revenge on Sid attacking him. I was a huge Shawn Michaels fan. Well, Gorilla Monsoon came in and said that match was not what the fans wanted. The fans wanted to see a rematch of the ladder match of Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon, which in hindsight was an amazing match and like a classic match, not quite as good as WrestleMania 10, but still awesome. As a kid, I was very upset that Shawn Michaels was not going to get his revenge against Sid, and I would have rather seen, as a 9-year-old WWF fan, Shawn Michaels versus Sid rather than another ladder match, which shows kind of how stupid I was back then.
Well, you wanted the continuity to pay off,
I did. I wanted the storyline. I wasn't into the match quality. I wanted to see Shawn Michaels get the super kick on Sid. So that concludes my as a kid corner for today, but needed to bring that up.
Did they ever explain why Sid was out of the match? I can't remember them. Was there a legit injury or something?
No, they just thought the card sucked.
They literally just changed it and like, oh, we'll give the fans a ladder match. So,
yep.
Put butts in the seats. And it did. It was a great match. But
there was a better match.
Continuity wise, though, it should have paid off.
It really upset me. Yep. Oh, never forgave him for that.
That's great. Well, they'll get that match down the road. So
yeah. Well, go say what you were gonna say.
Oh, I was gonna say that. So after that recap package, then Undertaker and Paul Bearer gave a promo. This is one where my son commented that Paul Bearer has a hilarious voice, but it's very Bray Wyatt-ish, man. Did you listen to it?
It's very dark, very intense,
all over the place. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's creepy. It's like he's more serious. He's always serious, but it just seemed like. Yeah, a lot to say, and it was very, like, very Bray Wyatt-ish. Like, you really didn't know. If you just watched it, you'd been like, what? Like, I didn't write down all the things, because it was a really long monologue. I was going to write it down and repeat it, but it was a lot of stuff. But it was just very, very Bray Wyatt-ish to me. I don't know, I just thought it was very different from the past ones.
I see what you mean. He says,
The sands have fallen slowly through the hourglass till this time. And now, as the last one slides through, your day of reckoning is at hand. The day that you come face to face with all that is good and all that is evil. You look into the eyes of the Reaper, and you'll see that your fate is sealed.
And he's just very intense, very strong in it, and I said, you know, it might have been a little bit cheesy, but I tell you what, after he was done, I wanted to see Taker kill this guy, man.
Like, oh, yeah, absolutely.
It made me want to see this match. Made me want to see him get some revenge. I mean, that's how you cut a promo right there.
Yeah. No, I liked it. I liked how it was different. It wasn't just like a funeral pun or a rest in peace or I'm going to bury you 6 feet under. It was very, like mythical. It had a different aura about it. But, yeah, you're right, man. I was ready to see him get his comeuppance. So for sure, I mean, I enjoyed the difference in it, but it was cool.
Yeah, let's get into it. Let's see him get his comeuppance here. We've got Jerry the King and Vince McMahon back on the commentary team this time after our Doc Hendricks experiment on the last episode. I'm not sure if we see Doc again on any of the pay per views, but we've got Jerry
Doc
and
Hendricks
Vince.
Experience in, related to the Jimi Hendrix experience.
Oh,
that's one of their first albums, one of Jimmy Hendrix's first albums. So,
good catch.
Surely he came up with his own name, right? Doc Hendricks.
Oh, I hope not.
Anyway, all right, yeah.
Well, King says as Undertaker's coming out, if he were alive, he'd be a very sick man. So that's his read on the Undertaker at this point.
Yeah, but Kama comes out first. DiBiase's music. Again, I appreciate the stable having the same music. You know, I like the corporation having the same music. But when that gong hits, dude, Pittsburgh erupts.
They're so excited. Yep.
It's so good. And again, just goes to show, again, Kama's not the greatest. This isn't the greatest technical match you're going to see, but the story, I feel like the crowd's been invested in it, you know?
Yeah.
It's not the Mabel match where, you know, they weren't really invested, or King Kong Bundy where it's just like, eh. Like, this match, they're invested because it's been built over time. It just goes to show the, you know, the brilliance of building a story, allowing it room to breathe, you know?
And the importance of building up a strong character. You know, Undertaker's protected. He's strong. He's over, man. He's just as over now as he has been at any point. It shows. Kama, as Undertaker comes in, he's not afraid of him. He's shadow boxing. He's cocky. Yeah. It kind of fits his character, man. He's stolen the urn. He's gotten one over on Undertaker. He thinks he's going to be the man to take the Undertaker down. So I like that he wasn't really scared of him. It made sense for the storyline.
Yeah, oh yeah. When Undertaker brings the lights up, he's in his little fight stance. Like you say, he's shadow boxing. He's standing there like DJ Combo from Killer Instinct.
Right.
You know? Ready to take some money. Or Johnny Cage from Mortal Kombat or something, you know, ready to fight. So,
and did you catch a young Tony Chimmel backing out of the camera frame?
Oh, was that Tony Chimmel?
Yeah, he's like the ring attendant getting the jackets. Okay. And like he's on camera, and then he like ducks out of the view of the camera real quick.
I do want to note, though, I didn't notice that was him. That's funny, though. But the casket is already at ringside at this point.
Oh, it's true. Yeah.
You know, every other casket or coffin match we watched, Paul Bearer pushes it out.
Right. That's a good point.
Push it out or whoever. But at this point, I was wondering, because they got to the ring, and I was like, oh. But it is the big one, the double deep, double wide. It seems it's big. And it's got the old Rest in Peace Undertaker sticker on top of it, too, like the other ones did. So, but yeah, it was already at ringside. So, I just, you know, that's different from the other ones we've seen.
Yeah, a little bit of a change. And another change, as you mentioned a little bit earlier, is that we've seen Undertaker get attacked at the beginning of a few of these matches. Like before the bell, they sneak attack Undertaker. Undertaker instead changes it up, and he goes on the offensive before the bell rings in this match.
Yeah, he throws his jacket off. I guess to Tony Chimmel, like you said, he throws his hat like a who's that guy from Mortal Kombat? Kung Lao. Remember he takes his hat off and throw it? He throws his hat like that just into the audience. It seems he just throws it, and he just starts wailing on Kama. Man, I appreciate that because again, it shows you how angry he is, you know, storyline-wise.
Right.
He's angry. He's not going to sit back and be methodical about it. He's angry about this, you know, come across the line stuff. So I just appreciate that small nuance that, you know, if you hadn't followed the story, it may not have seemed different, but we've been following these matches, and, it's very different beginning to an Undertaker match.
It's not like Triple H and Randy Orton locking up after their blood feud at WrestleMania 25 and just starting off with a lockup, you know.
No,
Undertaker goes after him.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. We'll get there eventually, that show. Yeah.
But
it's great. He gets it started, man. Chops in the corner, double hand. He does a double hand chokelift slam just like to Kama, just like he does to the Creature of the Night. So I appreciated that little bit of, you know, poetic justice, I guess, you know.
Yeah, I thought that was so cool. A good little piece of psychology there. And the announcers didn't pick up on it, but, you know, if you watched the video package beforehand, then, yeah, that was a cool little nod to that moment.
Yeah, it was. Really neat.
Then Kama, like, right off the bat, takes a big bump onto the casket. There's a few bumps onto the casket. I don't remember if this was, like, a back body drop, which one this was. I just wrote it down, and Mr. Man says he just got the willies from watching that happen, which is like such a Vince McMahonism, like outdated saying. Oh, that gave me the willies.
1958. He brings it up in 95. Yeah,
but it happens a few times in this match, and man, it's hard to watch them take those bumps on that casket, just knowing what's going to happen to Shawn Michaels here in a couple years, and just how easily they could have hit that angle wrong and messed up their back on there. Kama and Undertaker both take some pretty nasty ones onto that casket.
Yeah, they did, which, in my opinion, was ahead of its time. I mean, and you didn't, well, I guess you have the ladder match, but other than that, I mean, you don't see this kind of, you know, brutality, maybe, you know? It's pretty brutal for that, you know, in a different way, not being bloody and stuff.
Right.
At least in WWF at this point. I don't think there was anybody was ever getting color. Anybody was bleeding, I don't think, at this point, so.
Yeah, not too much. Yeah.
But when Kama gets knocked onto the casket, he immediately gets casket phobia like all other big guys.
Of course.
He rolls off of it back into the ring, and he's getting a little scared about it, you know. Vince, I do appreciate this. Vince on commentary says, he's like, you know, if Undertaker gets thrown in that casket, you know, the last time he was still in the casket, we didn't see him for a long time, you know, talking about 94. So I appreciated that a little bit. You know, they nowadays they kind of insult your intelligence and whatever happened 2 weeks ago doesn't never happen. But, you know, this happened a year and a half before this and they were still talking about it. So I appreciate that.
That's true. That's a good point.
Another Stinger splash, dude.
Hits a big splash, hits the old school, and then sends Kama into the casket, and we get our first glimpse at the new upgrade on this year's model of the casket, what Jerry Lawler calls the...
We got the SummerSlam coffin camera going!
You got a what?
A SummerSlam coffin camera! Never heard of a coffin camera? There it is! It's inside the camera! It's inside the coffin!
SummerSlam coffin camera?
SummerSlam coffin camera. Yeah. There is a camera inside the coffin. Not, I guess, a GoPro prototype inside the casket, but they call it the coffin camera.
Right. That's what, I wrote down GoPro shot inside, and as I'm writing that, Jerry Law was like, "It's the SummerSlam coffin camera," and I just started laughing, because Vince is like, "What? SummerSlam coffin camera? I never heard of a SummerSlam coffin camera." And I think he's being legit. Like, I think Lawler just, went into business for himself there. But
that was
it's
cool.
Great.
Yeah.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's calling it the coffin camera. And he needs to go back and listen to episode, whatever that was, 5 or 6. And there's a difference, man.
There is a huge difference.
A casket. Yeah. This is definitely a casket.
It's clearly a casket match, not a coffin match.
But Vince even slips up and does coffin several times, too. So whatever. We're just nitpicking. It's funny. But Kama is freaking out, though, when he gets thrown in there. So.
Oh, yeah. He's selling that well. You know,
he gets back in the ring and hits Taker with a clothesline, I think. But then Taker sits up, you know, and the crowd comes alive. Man, they pop big for those sit-ups. Again, that hasn't gotten old. I think a couple episodes ago, you know, it kind of disappeared. The crowd wasn't popping as huge for that kind of stuff. But I think it was maybe the towns they were in and the workers he was working against. But this time, again, the crowd's invested. They love it.
So. They are. They start rolling off some rest in peace chants real loud. Both guys get thrown into the casket at one point, and then Kama kind of takes over. DiBiase distracts Undertaker, and then
The urn necklace, yes.
Kama starts just doing some kind of generic stomps, punches, and kicks.
I would call it supreme fighting, my friend.
Oh, excuse me. That's what that was. You're right.
Lots of supreme fighting. Yeah, that's what I wrote down. Lots of supreme fighting in the ring. Punches, kicks, you know. He's doing his best like a shooter. You know,
yeah,
only a UFC fight, but lots and lots of supreme fighting from Kama here.
But then,
at this point, though, this is when Jerry Lawler says he thinks the Undertaker is going to crawl over to the casket and close it himself, so he can get away because he thinks that would be better for Undertaker to do. He's taking such a supreme beating, he should crawl over there and crawl in it and just call it a day. I just thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, that's a great heel commentary point to make and bring up. He's such a heel. Like, he's just openly cheering for Kama in this match.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just funny to hear. No one really does that kind of stuff anymore. Right. DiBiase interferes again. He ends up, he just kind of distracted Undertaker, but now he's punching him and kicking him on the outside.
Before you go there, I want to talk about something that happened right before this.
Okay.
Kama is in charge. He's getting his heat here. He's punching Undertaker in the corner. He brings him out into the middle of the ring, like holding his arm like he's going to do an Irish whip, takes him against the ropes, like runs him back and forth against the ropes, like doesn't throw him, and then he puts him back into the corner and punches him again.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely some kind of missed spot there, missed call
That's
or something.
True.
He just, it's very, very awkward. Again, not criticizing the work there, but it is just, it's so weird. But then, this is where DiBiase comes in. Go ahead, what you were saying.
Yeah, I glanced over that, but you're right. Yeah, there was a big miscommunication there.
It was
just weird looking. DiBiase's landing some stomps on the outside, and Paul Bearer loses his mind. He throws his jacket off and runs like, you know, somebody's just put some ragu on the table or something. And it's just like both referees on the outside are holding him back. He's screaming, like, trying to punch DiBiase. I've never seen Paul Bearer get so upset. I feel like Undertaker was about to start cracking up at this point, because I was losing it just seeing him.
Yeah. He turns into this raging rhinoceros, man. He is going on rampage. Why are the refs holding him back but not DiBiase?
I don't know. It's no DQ.
Oh, Oh, maybe. You know, everybody's got a price. $9 man.
So oh, maybe he paid him off. Touche. Yeah.
Never know.
Because it's no DQ. They should just let everybody fight. You
yeah.
Know?
But, dude, the crowd goes bananas when he starts.
They do.
The Paul Bear starts going nuts. The crowd is electric, man. They are so hyped for that. So. It's great.
Man, you know, I always loved Paul Bearer, but I've really appreciated him so much more just watching these matches and watching him direct the crowd and just know the perfect time to get them into it. He's absolutely a Hall of Famer.
He's a
man.
Yeah.
He is.
He knows exactly what to do. He's underrated. You know, everybody talks about, you know, Heyman and Heenan and stuff like that, and they're great. But they all have different jobs, and his job, his role in this particular job for Undertaker, he's amazing.
He's so perfect. I'm excited to see, you know, him as a heel, too, because we're going to get that here in a little while. I'll get to see him turn on The Undertaker, and I'll be excited to see him do that work as well.
So, well, you know, getting back to the matches, you know, classic Undertaker throws somebody's head into the steps. That's almost every match we're in.
Yep.
He does that. But he kind of stalks DiBiase away at this point. He doesn't come out, doesn't run after him. He's not raging. He just kind of stalks him away. And at this point, Kama slams him to the steel post and hits his head on the casket, and he does a huge suplex on top of the casket.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both on the outside on the mat, and he suplexes Undertaker up and onto the lid of the casket, and it breaks a little bit, too. The commentary even points it out, but I was like, no, they're not. Like, it'd been a long time since I've seen this match, and so I forgot about this spot, and I was like, oh, my goodness, that was a huge – those are two huge guys to be suplexing each other, you know?
Me too, man. That was one that really made me cringe and be like, oh, my goodness, that is really dangerous. It easily could have gone wrong, hurt his neck or back or something like that.
Especially if he was out for 8 months in 94 for his back problems. You know, like, here he is getting suplexed. But, you know, kudos to them for doing it. But it was a cool spot, and now they're both on the casket. And Kama goes to try for a pile driver, and I was like, please don't do it.
Oh, yeah, I know, yeah. But even so, like, you knew he couldn't do it because there was no place for him to land. Like,
right,
he was standing so far back, he would have fallen backwards and broke his back, fallen off the casket.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I was really hoping they wouldn't, but you kind of knew they wouldn't. And Taker gets the reversal, gets the backdrop, and then we get another huge rest in peace chant from the crowd.
Yeah.
They're getting excited, but Kama takes over again with a power slam and then tries to pin the Undertaker.
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, man.
What is he, Kamala? You know?
Though. Huh?
I said, does he think he's Kamala? Just, like, forgetting the rules of the match?
Or what's the Funkadactyl name? What was the girl's name after the pin?
Cameron.
The girl's shoulders were the other way around. Yeah. Try to pin her face down. Yeah, it looks so dumb. He does a good power slam, but then he goes for a pin like an idiot. And even commentary calls him out on it. They're like, there's no pinfalls in it.
Right.
You can't pin him here, so... But he transitions that into a side headlock, rest hold, you know. And he does the sleeper with the feet on the ropes, you know, classic Ric Flair move, which I mentioned before we started recording. I thought it was kind of dumb that he did that because there's no DQ, but you pointed out, actually a smart move because there is no DQ.
Because there's no DQ.
Leverage.
Yeah.
So
Kane points that out too, and then Mr. Man's like, well, you're right, no DQ, he should be doing that. Yeah, you're right.
Yep. You're right. I apologize. My apologies for criticizing Kama there. So.
But Paul Bearer was not happy about that either, and he walks over... He swats Kama's feet off and then does a Ric Flair strut walking out, like, totally breaks character and just, like, is so excited that he helped out his man. And then Kama kind of swats him away or grabs his hair or something like that.
Yeah.
But, man, Paul Bearer's the MVP of this match for me.
It's so good,
no
man.
Doubt about it.
At this point, the production team decides to show us some cosplayers in the crowd.
Oh, my gosh.
I think... You're outrageous. I think you tweeted a picture about it. So
I didn't do this one. I tweeted out the one, or I will eventually. I did the one from WrestleMania today.
Okay.
But there's one Undertaker guy, and then another guy who looks like one of the guys we trained to wrestle with. You remember? It was Sin? Was that his name?
Yeah.
Six? Sin? I don't remember.
I think it was Six, but it was spelled differently from Xbox Six.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well... You know, we'll have to get into that story on another episode, but
yeah.
Travis and I once trained to wrestle with a kind of a glorified backyard wrestling promotion for a couple months back in 2006, about 11 years ago. We were in college. We spent a little time. We learned how to take a bump and worked a couple practice matches, but never never officially made our debut, and I'm sure we'll talk about that maybe when we get to that era in the Undertaker's career. But one of these guys, he's a local worker in Georgia. I think his name is Six. Looked just like, maybe it could have been him easily in the crowd. I don't know why he was in Pittsburgh, but it looked just like him. Sort of the Jeff Hardy makeup that he would use later on.
Yeah.
But it was hilarious.
Yeah, that was great, man. So the cosplayers are always fun to point out. So, but Taker finally gets out of that rest spot with a power slam, and Kama kicks him in the back immediately, gets his heat spot, and humongous throw into the turnbuckle.
Yeah.
He throws him in turnbuckle, like Taker hits his back real hard.
I love that, man. Taker's selling. He's working the match. It was great.
Yeah, he's selling because he got suplexed on the casket, you know, and he doesn't have his urn anymore, you know, so.
Right.
Now, I wonder, does he still get power from the urns in necklace form, or does it have to be in the shape of a bowl?
It's a good question.
Flashlight inside of it. I don't know. But at this point, the match is back and forth. They're trading spots here, jumping, diving, running clothesline. The lid's open. They clothesline, I think Taker clotheslines Kama over the top, they both fall in.
Yep.
And Super SummerSlam coffin camera goes black.
It goes dark. What are they doing in there?
I have no idea. It's just, I don't think that was supposed to happen, but it goes black, and Kama comes out, like, he starts crawling out, almost like from a horror movie. I love this shot because production has it right across the ring from him, and he's crawling out of there, and Undertaker just reaches up and grabs him and drags him back in like a creature from the Black Lagoon or something. It is so hokey, but so cool, man. Like,
yeah, it's perfect. It's one of those things that everyone lauds WWE, WWF's production values, and that's just one of those perfect things. You know, I'm sure they worked that spot out beforehand and knew exactly what to do, knew exactly what they were going for, executed it, and, I mean, it was awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Well done.
I want to point out, you know, the last previous casket and coffin matches we've gotten, we've seen Undertaker build them himself, right?
Yes.
The most of them.
Yeah,
now,
in his workshop.
I don't think he was the craftsman on this one because at this point in the match, when they crawl out, the lining of the lid falls off.
It does, yeah.
Inside. So I must not have been the handiwork of the Undertaker and Paul Bearer, because theirs never broke. So.
Yeah. I don't know what happened here, because I guess they're working more in the casket than they have beforehand, and knocks off the top cushioning on there. But man, that's a great point. His production values have really fallen off here, and maybe it's because he doesn't have the urn. He's not strengthened in the wood shop as much either. And
they didn't push it out. We don't know that they built it, you know. So
true,
because they didn't roll it out. We didn't see the video of them building it. We don't know, man. So
it's a mystery.
If any of you built it, let us know. So
well, then we kind of roll into the finish here. They both get out of the coffin. Kama hits Honky Tonk Man's old move. Hits the Shake, Rattle, and Roll neck breaker.
I love the swinging neck breaker, man.
It's a great move.
It's not used enough.
It's not.
It's a great move. It's just visually, you know, watching somebody swing back and forth. It's a great move.
It is a good move. But it doesn't do the trick on Undertaker as he gets up, hits a big choke slam, and starts milking the crowd, man. He's standing there kind of looking around, and Paul Bearer starts looking around and pointing to the crowd. It's just like building and building, and the crowd is roaring, just ready to see a tombstone. And I start thinking, you know, we haven't seen a tombstone yet this year on pay-per-view. He did IRS and King Kong Bundy with the clotheslines, and then he hit Mabel with a chokeslam, but we have not seen a tombstone on pay-per-view. He's done a few on TV. But as far as our podcast, we have not seen a tombstone yet in 1995, and hits the throat slash and our first tombstone of the year, and the crowd is just electric.
Raging.
Oh my goodness, man.
Yeah, they're going nuts, man. I love it. I wrote all that stuff, same stuff down you did too, man. It's so good. Like, this is the first time I've really seen him milk the crowd like that.
Right.
Know? Like, play to the crowd like that. But he looks around, you know, and they're, you know, when he does that throat slash, they just come unglued. When he picks that big man up for that tombstone, which looks really crisp, by the way.
It does.
His head's really close. It's not the sloppy ones like earlier episodes, but it's really good one. And that crowd just goes crazy, man. So
then they start, even a few of them start chanting casket after that. So he tosses him in the casket, shuts the lid, and everybody goes home happy.
Yeah. Yeah, 16 minutes and 26 seconds. Long match. But it honestly didn't feel that bad.
I didn't hate it.
With the long headlock. I didn't hate this match like I thought I was going to. Just because, you know, Kame is what he is. Although he's a supreme fighter, I will say.
He is a supreme fighter, but that would not be enough to take down The Undertaker tonight. It was a decent match, and the crowd really made it. The crowd and Paul Bearer really made it, the atmosphere on there. Casket matches have been fun so far, just kind of the vibe of them. So I don't know. I can't remember. I'm sure there's some bad ones that we'll get to, but they've been pretty fun so far. So, yeah, this was a good build-up and conclusion here to this feud, and solid match.
Solid match. The only thing that I thought was a missed opportunity, and I can't remember if it comes into play later, but the Creatures of the Night didn't get involved.
No, they didn't get their revenge.
I thought that would come to play. Again, I haven't seen this match in a long time, so I couldn't remember, honestly, but I thought they would have something to do with it, you know, or they would lift the casket open for him or close it, shut it. So I just thought that was, in hindsight, a missed opportunity, but it didn't matter. The crowd couldn't have cared less. If the Creatures were there, the crowd didn't matter. They were in the palm of Undertaker's hands. So.
That's right. But that's true. That would have been a good continuity point to have them get involved, and I'm not sure if we ever see them again.
We'll see, I guess.
I don't think so, but.
Did you notice that tombstone the kid in the audience had right after the match ended? Tombstone for a comma. It was great. So.
And I think the version on the network is clipped, too, because they kind of cut Undertaker's celebration short and go right to the announcers. And I'm not sure when or how the Undertaker gets the urn back, either.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
So we'll have to find out.
I thought it happened after this match, like in the post-match. And maybe it did, maybe it didn't, maybe it got edited out for some reason. But we'll have to research that, and we'll update on the next episode if we see anything.
Yeah.
What is the next pay-per-view? What are we doing next? Is there an In Your House, or are we going straight to Survivor Series?
I think it's Survivor Series.
Okay.
And then In Your House Season Beatings is after that, I believe. So.
Okay.
But I do want, while I'm checking on that, I did mention that as Undertaker's, the brief celebration that we do see, Vince McMahon says, you know, Undertaker wins, he's part of the new generation here in the WWF. So, I don't know, I just thought that was notable. Survivor Series is 95 is our next one, and then In Your House Season Beatings is after that. So.
Okay. Well, Survivor Series will be fun. It's another 8-man tag, so that we had fun with that last one, Survivor Series 93. Yeah. But, you know, before we close it out, I just want to mention, too, I should have mentioned this towards the beginning, but, you know, this is the end of that feud between Undertaker and Kama, sort of. I think Kama's in that Survivor Series match, so a little bit of extension towards that. But this has not only been building up for a year, this has not only been building up for 5-6 months since WrestleMania, but in a way this feud kind of goes back to 1989, because I did not realize this, and maybe some of our other listeners did, and you know, shame on me for not knowing this, but I was searching today just on YouTube, I typed in Undertaker, promo, just to see if there's any promos, interviews from some shows that people might have uploaded on YouTube. I always do that in these episodes. And the first thing that came up was from CWA Memphis Wrestling 1989. It is the Soul Taker, who was Kama.
Oh, yeah.
And the Master of Pain, the Undertaker, who were apparently a tag team for a little bit of a run back in Memphis in 1989. And I had no idea. I knew they were friends. They were both in the BSK, the... Bone Street Crew or whatever, the anti-click back in the WWF, but their friendship went back to Memphis Wrestling. So there's actually a good number of videos of them. If you search Undertaker, Memphis on YouTube, and it's real funny to look at, man. I sent it to you.
It's hilarious, man. It looks like some of our videos we used to make back in the day, but again, it's pretty cool to see them go from, you know, 1989 as, you know, just some young studs that were starting out, and to see them, you know, get to have a main event match, you know, a featured match on SummerSlam 95. So that's good for their friendship, and cool to see the story continue, and it will end there. Again, we did mention episodes ago that they never got to feud as Papa Shango.
Yeah.
And they're taking this opportunity. So here they got their time to feud, which is cool. So
it's just neat to see that.
It was neat.
Yeah, really, really young Undertaker with shorter red hair mullet. He's looking all booger red. And like you mentioned, Charles Wright, the Godfather, just looking ageless
wonder
in there. But yeah, they were friends back then, working back then, and just reminds me of, you know, when you're watching wrestling and you're younger, especially, you just kind of think that the guys on TV, like, this is all they've ever done. Like, when you're watching WWE, that's Undertaker. He started as the Undertaker, and he's and he's been around for like 6 months or a year or so. But really, those guys have been around for 6, 7, 8 years. You know, Ted DiBiase, I always thought was just always the $1 million man, but that was literally the end of his career. He had a 20-year career ahead of that, and you know, I'm sure there's gonna be kids one day that now are watching Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, and 10 years from now they're gonna realize, oh, those guys wrestled for 10 years before they got to WWE, and they had all this history with each other that they kind of mention sometimes on TV, but they don't really understand that, like, their history together. I always think that's real cool to see.
Well, yeah, it is. It is definitely for sure. So it was a neat little promo you sent me. So I was glad. We'll have to put it up on the Facebook page so for everybody else to see and hear. So, well, that's one thing too that you mentioned, like, because some people when we started this podcast were like, you guys, you know, you're talking Taker, but you need to go back to his, you know, Memphis matches. And they said, well, that's not, we understand he existed before then, but we're not talking Mark Calloway, you know, we're talking Taker. So that's what we're doing here. And, you know, Undertaker's matches, but yeah, we do realize he existed beforehand, several years beforehand. But
and we might cover one or two of those maybe in the future as a bonus episode, but we're definitely not going to go through all of those. But it might be fun to look at here somewhere later down the line. But if you want to see those, we'll post a couple of those YouTube videos on our Twitter and Facebook, so go like us, follow us at Talking Taker on both of those, and you can get all the updates. And like I said, we try to post stuff all throughout the week, promos building up the match, funny pictures, just little clips and snippets of the match, stuff we don't even get to talk about here on the episode. Right. So a lot of bonus content on there if you're an Undertaker fan. And we also will do some commentary during the pay-per-views, Raws and SmackDowns. So we'll talk a little bit about the current business on there as well. And we love to interact with people. I put out something on there on our last episode. It didn't come in before we recorded it, but I was just asked if anybody had any memories about Undertaker and Mabel, and this came in from Tombstone Town on Twitter, at WWE Nostalgic. Asked if anybody had any memories of Undertaker's feud with Mabel, and he said, or she, I'm not sure, but they said, being a 13-year-old at that point, watching Taker get pinned for the first time in like 4 years or something at that point, and, you know, the fans were expecting an epic Shawn and Taker semifinal. So, you know, lots of people were disappointed with that King of the Ring match. And, yeah, it would have been, could have seen the Undertaker, Shawn Michaels long before their epic WrestleMania 25 battle if things had worked out differently. So, yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad they agree with us.
Yeah, we appreciate all the followers. We appreciate you listening and subscribing on iTunes, Podomatic, Stitcher, Google Play, any and all that stuff, YouTube, all that good stuff. We do appreciate you listening, and we hope you will continue on listening. Watch the next match, Survivor Series 1995, and we'll have it up there next Friday. Actually, usually goes up Thursday late at night. I try to get on there before I go to bed Thursday, so you can download it Thursday late night, Friday morning, really anytime. And we hope you go back and listen to all the ones you haven't listened to yet.
And if you guys were there, if you were at this pay-per-view, again, please let us know, because we congratulate you. Y'all were an excellent crowd that night, so it was phenomenal. So thank you, Pennsylvania, for being the host of the last two episodes of Talking Taker. We appreciate it. And ladies and gentlemen, take her easy.
Evansville wins tonight, the Soul Taker there. Dustin Rhodes, you're a big, bad cowboy. Been going through everybody. Well, let me tell you something, boy. I've been going through people, too. There is no law when it comes to the Soul Taker. I'll go through you as easy as the rest.
Master of Pain against Dutch Mantel wins tonight.
Well, Dutch, the master plan is just about ready to be fulfilled, man. Wednesday night, Evans. You're going down to wrath of the Master of Pain. I don't forget a thing, Dutch, and you won't either.
Wednesday night, Evansville Coliseum. Tomorrow afternoon, Owensboro Sports Center in Owensboro, Kentucky. Plus Christmas chaos coming your way.